Running 100% keeps me sober. I was a bad drug addict. I was the type that ends up dead or in prison. So if I can do it, anyone can do it.
Hey guys, this is Nikki Tamburino, also known on Instagram as One Classy Mother Runner, and you're listening to the Maybe Running Will Help podcast, the show that explores the why of running for people who love to run. Today, you're going to hear an incredible running story. After 2 years of sobriety from heroin and meth, our guest rediscovered his love for running. And 5 years later, this past December, he qualified for the Olympic marathon team trials. Mitch Ammons was a bad drug addict, and today we're going to discuss how he found redemption through our sport. We kick off the episode discussing pre-race nerves and training before exploring his past and why he strives to give hope to anyone struggling to see the other side of addiction. Thank you so much for joining us. Let's get started.
All right, cool. So, anyway, when I first contacted you, I was like, I didn't know who you were. I saw you come across, I think, with your post for CIM somehow. It probably was like on my recommended feed or something like that. So I was like, oh my God, like I wanted to learn more about you, because I think in your caption there, you were talking about kind of things that you had been through, I guess probably like 7 years ago. But before we even get into any of that, like you have so much like more recent stuff that you need to be congratulated on, because like this, just last month you ran like a 104 half, right?
Yeah.
Was that a PR for you?
It was, yeah. It was about a minute PR.
Dang. Oh my God. That's so fast. That's under 5 minute miles. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's freaking insane.
Thanks.
But I don't know, more importantly than that, right? Congratulations. You just got engaged.
I did just get engaged.
Christmas. Yeah.
Yeah. It's Christmas.
Yeah, you're crushing it right now. Like all over the same life, right?
Yeah, well, let's hope so.
Cool. But yeah, so I guess tell me a little bit about this half. Like, is that something, I mean, you just come off of CIM, so do you feel like you still had some of that fitness like you were going off of? Like, was this a planned race or just like up in last minute?
It's a hometown race. It's a race I've wanted to do for a while. It's in Austin. It's usually the same weekend as the Houston half. So I chose to do Houston half the last year, but it's a race I've wanted to do for a while. It was kind of, there was no really any other focus other than CIM in December. And so anything after that was just like, whatever, I'll get to that when I get to that. But I definitely had some residual leftover fitness from the marathon training. So I was able to even just do a few workouts and just hope for the best. And it ended up working out.
That's awesome. That's the best when you're like coming off of like an awesome race and then you're like, yeah, another awesome race. And just like, you just right, really got it all off of like that one training season. You really got your money's worth.
Yeah.
So before we even get into the outline, I was so excited because I was like, oh, I'm going to ask him about this. I was writing a blog today. I want to get your thoughts on it, because it was, I'm thinking about like race nerves, right? Like I'm running just a 5K tomorrow, like, but still, like, it doesn't matter what like race, like there's always like race nerves. And I was thinking about like, what are we really nervous about? Because when you're like, when you cross the start line, right? Like, you're not nervous anymore. You're not thinking about yesterday. You're not thinking about tomorrow. Like, you're literally just trying to like survive like the race. So like all this time, like we think that we're nervous about like the race, but really like, what are we nervous about?
That's funny, because when the second you brought up nerves, I was thinking in my head, like, what am I actually nervous about? And then you said it.
Yeah.
That was good. You want to know my opinion?
Yeah. Like, what do you think? Like, and I'm just wondering if your opinion is like the same as my opinion, because I'm writing this blog and whenever I write, I'm writing as if like, how I think is how every other runner thinks. So I want to ask you, like, what are we really nervous about?
I know I'm nervous about how bad it's going to hurt.
Okay.
Oh yeah. That's a big one. And then it's just like, you work so hard for 4 months or 6 months, and then it all comes down to this one day, and it could be something as minor as like having to stop to go to the bathroom, and then there goes your whole race.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, I have a story at CIM where I actually had to do that, but it was my biggest fear in a race is like stomach problems, because right. it's not an injury. It's not a lack of fitness, but it's something that can destroy the whole race and everything you've worked for the last however many months.
Right.
But yeah, that did happen at CIM and it was okay. And so now I have no fears.
You still crushed CIM and had to stop?
Yeah, I stopped in a bush. Yeah.
Wow. Well, that, I feel like that's going to be helpful for a lot of us to know that. Like, you can still have a good race and like stop.
I was running through the scenario in my head, like kind of when my stomach started to hurt, I was like, look, I've said this to many people before. If I have to go, I'm just going to go and going to get out of the way of people and just let it happen. Cause I've seen it before. A lot of the pros have done it and it's just like, whatever, I'm not going to, but I was running and I kind of moved out of this pack that I was in and I was thinking of my options. And then I saw a spot like tucked back against the wall with the bush. And so I'm like pulling my pants down as I'm running. I go there and I go to the bathroom and then I take off running. I lose about probably 30 or 45 seconds and I make that up over the next half mile or so. And when I got back to the pack, this was like mile 18, and I caught back up and they're like, wow, these guys were like, I saw you pull off the course and pull your pants down. I thought you were done. And then here you are.
Oh my God. Wow. So you can recover from that. That's really good to know.
I did. And it's funny because two of my friends who have, well, really one who has, it's just kind of a thing that people who, some of the greatest races have come when you've got to take a bathroom stop. So it's been my biggest fear forever. So you want to talk about the nervousness of a race. It's like, am I going to throw this whole race away because I have to stop and go to the bathroom?
Right. Oh, that's a really good story. And I have not heard anybody like tell us that before.
Yeah. So
that's awesome. Yeah. And I talked to a like mental performance coach recently, and she was talking about stuff like that. Cause a lot of us are nervous about like having to go to the bathroom or like mm-hmm. our shoe comes untied. Like you said, all that stuff, like you really just can't like plan for. And she's like, just do it. Just because the more you think about it, your heart rate's going to elevate. It's going to mm-hmm. impact your performance because you're thinking about it. You're worrying about it. You know, if it's a bathroom thing, you're going to be uncomfortable. So just like, mm-hmm. just take care of it and like move on, you know, you just have to. But so getting back to like the race nerves and stuff like that. So if you're super afraid, like when it's going to hurt, right? So you're in that scenario and you're in like, it's you're hurting and like, you have to keep going. Like, but at that point, like, what are your options, right? Like, what are you thinking? Yeah. Like, you're either gonna like either push through it or like not, right? So like, I don't know, to be afraid of that, it's almost like, I don't know. Like, yeah, I get it. Like, you're afraid that it's gonna hurt, but when it hurts, it's like, it just is what it is, right?
Yeah, and there's like the two options. And I think my fear is like, am I mentally tough enough to keep going? When it really starts to hurt. And it's kind of a silly fear because, I mean, I do it in practice and I do it when I've raced a lot since I started running and I've never not been tough enough to keep going. And so I don't know why I'm nervous about it, but it's just like anticipating, like I know it's going to hurt and I'm going to push through it anyway. That's got to be like where most of my nerves come from. But
when you're hurting, you're not worried about it, right? Because you're just like, okay, like I'm like hurting right now. And like, I don't know about you, but when I get to a certain point in a race, and maybe this is different at your level, I don't know, but like when I get to a certain point in a race and it's like hurts to a certain point, I'm just like, I just need to finish and whatever. Like, and usually I just want to finish as fast as possible because I want it to stop. So that's what keeps me going at a certain like pace.
Yeah.
But like, it's not like my goal, and maybe, like I said, maybe this is different for your level, but my goal almost at a certain point is like, whatever, like I'm hurting, like I just need to finish this.
Yeah.
And like, does that happen for you?
Yeah. And that is a very good point. It's like, as bad as it, and I know this going into it, I know it during, as bad as it's going to hurt, the second I cross the finish line, it all goes away. Like,
right.
I can lay down if I want to. I can drink as much water as I want. I can, you know, it's just like, get to that finish line. And that is a little reassuring because it is only temporary. And right. I don't know, I have this weird thing. I sort of tend to overrun workouts because I feel like if I don't go to the well, then I'm not getting anything out of it. So I almost get some like satisfaction out of the worse that it hurts, the better.
Okay.
It's probably not great for training. It's probably my biggest downfall in training is that I tend to race workouts.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I've gotten really used to like hurting real bad.
Right. I mean, it's working.
Yeah.
For you.
It is.
Yeah. And so another thing that I was thinking that like, then I was like, after I got point, I was like, okay, well the race, like I'm always anxious about the race, but maybe I'm not really worried about the race. Maybe what I'm worried about is like after the race, like, because how I'm going to deal with mentally, whatever transpired during the race, like how am I going to feel about my performance after? So that one, what I'm really afraid of is dealing with the aftermath, like whatever the race, like if you DNF or like, I feel like I'm afraid of DNFing or stuff, but not because of the DNF or whatever in the race. Like at that point, I'm just going to be like, obviously I thought that's what I could do. And I gave up, but like, it's the afterwards, like how I'm going to process, like how I performed.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm just like thinking about like, how do I prepare for that? How do we prepare for the aftermath?
I want to add something to what you just said, because I heard this from, I don't remember which, it's a pro runner. I think he's a Brooks runner. I don't remember who it was, but he said, I saw it on an Instagram reel or something. He had said that he has had a flight delayed and flew into a race the night before, the morning before it, like 4 a.m., didn't get any sleep, lined up at the starting line. He has had all sorts of circumstances out of his control that have happened. And even with all that, he lines up at the starting line and he says, none of that matters. I don't need sleep last night. It doesn't matter that this happened. I know that I've done the work. I know that I have the fitness and none of that matters. I'm going to line up on the starting line, whether I feel good or I don't feel good, it doesn't matter. And it's just like, you can run the race that you've prepared for. And that's given me a lot of comfort because I used to have a fear, like if I don't sleep well the night before, oh, my race is ruined. If I don't eat exactly what I want to eat the night before but like none of that actually matters. None of it matters. Yeah. You line up on that starting line. If you've done the work, if you've done the workouts, if you've done the miles, you're going to be fine. And if something does happen, it was out of your control. And that gives me some comfort because to hear someone say that, it's just like, those are the things that run through my head. And to know that other people think that way and then everything goes great is, and it's been proven to me to be true. It doesn't, none of that stuff matters. And, so
and when you say that story, it almost makes me think about like sometimes I actually like thrive in chaos because I'm not like ruminating over my like anxiety.
Right.
So like if all that stuff happens, like it's almost like I don't have time to worry about it. I just have to like get there and do it. So it's almost better because it really can be exhausting when your mind like goes crazy, like worrying.
Yeah,
so I mean that could be like worse.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, well, thanks for entertaining that like on the spot question. I was thinking about it and I was like, oh, I wonder what he thinks about it though.
So. Yeah, well, it's funny. So I did the Berlin marathon. I was out there pacing someone and I had no pre. I mean, I still was going to be pacing for a time that I had not run. I hadn't run anything close to it, but I knew I could. But the pressure, I felt no pressure. I was like, I'm here for one job and that's to pace this girl. And when I had no nervousness. I had nothing because the pressure was off. And I wish I could just, gather all of that and use it in all of my races because it went so well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it ended up not going well because I had like 2 weeks notice and I didn't quite have the fitness for the distance, but until it went horribly wrong, it went great. It was like 23 that I just completely fell apart and had both hamstrings and calves cramping. But I still think it was a great race for what was that. And I had no nervousness, no pressure. I was out there having fun and my job was there to help this other person. And that took a lot of the pressure off, and it really helped. So I wish I could like harness that and use it in all of my races.
That's a really helpful example, because even though, and I wasn't laughing because, you know, you had like a terrible race after like a certain point, but the fact that you were like, it was great until it wasn't, which sounds like many of the races that we like, yeah, do, like it's, everything's great until it isn't, you know,
right.
But the fact that you have like, you look back on that race and you have like a memories of like a good experience with that is really, I think, telling about like how we process like races. Like for you, yeah, like maybe that wasn't like a great race if you look on paper or whatever, but to you, you felt like that was a good race for mm-hmm. a certain reason that you want to like bottle up that feeling and take it with mm-hmm. you. So it's like, I mean, I think that's really interesting to think about. And I had a similar experience this past year. I ran a race. I ran a marathon to train for another marathon, which I know is not like super smart, but I was just like, I had like a 23-mile workout anyway. And I was like, I'm just going to like do this just as part of the workout. And like, sometimes you run three, like I had like rationalized it all in my brain. I'm like, sometimes you run like a 3-mile warm up before a marathon, like whatever, it's fine.
Yeah.
So I had no nerves or anything like that. I had programmed mm-hmm. the like workout in my watch. And it was a really, really hard course. And it's my favorite race of the entire year. It wasn't the race that I trained for, but I'm like, I had no nerves. I had mm-hmm. a great time. I was like smiling. I was like, you know, just having a great time, and ended up like doing pretty well. And I was like, God, if I could just like do that every time, like, how do I make that happen? Yeah. You know, exactly. It'd be cool if we could figure it out and let people know.
Yeah, exactly. It would be. It'd be great. Yeah. And it's easy to say it, but then in the moment, it's much harder to do it. But yes, ideally that would be exactly how it goes.
But I do get the point where like you work really hard when you're training for these races for a goal mm-hmm. race, and you want it to go well. So I think it's perfectly fine to have like those expectations, and fair to get nervous for something that you care about. So
I also want to throw it out there that I think nervousness helps, because I think whatever hormones get released once you're the gun goes off, like something, because there's nothing else explains how. And this has been every race I've ever run. I couldn't do it to save my life in a workout. I could not do what I did in races. Somehow on race day, it comes together. And I don't know, it could be the nerves or the adrenaline or what other hormones, but I can't explain it. That's why some of the nervousness I used to have was that, I'm not prepared enough for this race. But from learned this from experience, it doesn't matter how I feel the week leading up to the race, the day before the race, none of that matters. I have felt completely awful the day before, even during the warm-up of the race, and then still had a great race. And I don't know how to explain that. I don't know how I have no idea why that happens, but it has happened historically almost every single time. I've never felt good the week of a race.
Right.
And I don't look into it. Yeah. Honestly, if I don't feel good, I'm like, oh, good, it's going to be a great race.
It
used to be I was terrified. And then after it just kept happening and going well, I was like, well, good. So I won't look into it.
Yep. That's totally relatable. I was telling somebody this week, I was like, you can totally do this pace. I know you can do it. And I was like, don't worry if your marathon pace feels like impossible. Like during training, my marathon pace, like I'll run it for like 10 miles and I'll be like, there is no freaking way I'm doing this for 26 miles.
Exactly.
It always feels impossible. You're right. There's some kind of like magic of the race that happens. And I don't know what it is either, but it's so true. And it's so good to keep in mind, because you have so many doubts and those paces do feel impossible. And it's good for people to know that, like, I mean, I can't even, I try to think about when I first started training for a marathon and like how like, that must have felt to like have this pace in it and not know like that the race is so different, and to be like, this is so impossible. But if you don't know, like, so that all comes from experience.
I'm exactly the same.
Let's go back a little bit. Can you take us back to like, speaking of like starting running and stuff like that, like how did you start running? Like when did you start running?
So I started running 5 years ago, almost. Exactly.
Oh my gosh, only 5 years ago. Can I ask how old you are? Like, I don't know.
I'm 33.
Okay. Oh my gosh. Okay. Wow. That's incredible.
So I was like 28, I think.
Yeah. And you didn't run in high school or anything like that?
I did run in high school. I ran in high school. I was decent. I didn't put any effort into it. I smoked pot and I drank and I still was decent.
Okay.
So throughout my whole late teens, during college, after college, young adult, I had always had it in my head that I could be good at running. I didn't know how good, but I knew I had it in my genetics. I knew I had some talent because what I did in high school, I even starting in the eighth grade, I wanted to be a runner. In the fifth grade, I started running track because my parents were both marathoners. And I wanted to be a distance runner. That was my dream. I did great. Fifth and sixth grade, like, you know, it's just little kids, but seventh and eighth grade, I won all the races that I ran. And granted, I was in a small Catholic school league. But I made it to the city meet and I won the city meet and I got the season MVP and the meet MVP And then high school, there were like some big expectations. So I went to a Catholic high school as well. And I didn't actually get into the one that I had been planning on going to. It was like this all guys school right next to my elementary school. It was Jesuit high school in Dallas. And I went to this other school, but still, my expectations of myself and other people's expectations of me were that I was going to be pretty good. However, I just never really made it past decent because of my extracurricular activities, which is looking back, I'm like, I don't even know how I did what I did when I was using drugs and drinking.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's a huge part of my story. And until 7 years ago, it was basically my life, but, and, you know, we can talk about that or stick to running with either one.
No, I mean, I definitely want to talk about that. It is one of the reasons that I wanted to reach out to you because you know, the show is called Maybe Running Will Help. I've done an episode on addiction and how running has helped a lot of people stay sober. And so I'm definitely interested in bringing your story to the listeners. I think it's super inspiring when people, you know, use running to transform their lives and stay in a positive way and keep growing. So if you don't mind staying on that topic, I'd love to learn a little bit more about like that, like when in high school, like how like that transpired and your use and all that.
So just before I'll come back to this, before I forget, I love you. So you have talked to others about how running has kept people sober. I used to say, I've done a podcast and I've done an interview and I used to say, you know, I don't think running keeps me sober. It has definitely improved my life in a lot of ways. But since then, in the last 2 years, I'd say running 100% keeps me sober. It has changed my life in every single way possible. And I can get into that as well. My career, my fiance, my best friends, my everything was either inspired or it was through a connection in running.
Yeah.
Sobriety. I used to say, because I learned early on that like nothing can keep me sober other than like a certain, you know, like 12-step program or a higher power or whatever. Running keeps me sober. It's that important to me. Making myself better physically every day is more important to me now than drugs really ever were. And that is a miracle because that was the most important thing to me back then. Anyway, back to your question. When did it start? I think I started smoking pot in the eighth grade with a friend who has been my best friend since the fifth grade, who is still my best friend. He lives 4 miles away. But we did everything together, including getting into trouble.
But was it just like a, like, you were just like going to try it like type thing? It wasn't like, and nothing happened and you like got into drugs or
it was ever in my head that I just wanted to try it.
Okay.
So
it wasn't ever in your head.
No, it wasn't ever in my head. I wanted to do it. I wanted to be. Yeah.
Why? Like,
you know, I had friends with older brothers and I just, you know, I knew they smoked and drank and I was like, man, they're so cool. I don't know what it was that inspired that lifestyle. I mean, I know it was like guys that were older than me that I looked up to. Maybe okay. they knew me, maybe they didn't, but I looked up to them. I don't know what it was. I was kind of a dork in elementary school and middle school. I got into the cool crowd mm-hmm. or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I started branching out. So my best friend actually went to a different middle school and high school as me. But somehow we found each other because we were kind of like the edgy bad kid. You know, back then, nothing's actually bad. We were just kind of like troublemakers, class clowns.
Yeah.
But we found each other. And then that was just the beginning of this like tidal wave of like, we're going to get wild. But yeah, so eighth grade started experimenting with cigarettes and pot. And then once high school started, once I got a car, it was off to the races. Okay. Even before I got a car, I was interested in it. And I never wanted to get into the hard stuff. That wasn't what I wanted. I wanted to drink and smoke pot. And of course, that spiraled relatively quickly for me. I mean, I think for the most part, I was a young drug addict. You know, there are plenty, of course, but for the most part, people don't get into doing what I'm doing unless they've been doing it for a long time. And I mean, there's exceptions always, but yeah. So I, high school, I started experimenting with cocaine and pills, and it was still like a party scene for me. I wanted to drink and use cocaine and take pills so that I could party longer. It was a social thing. Cocaine makes you like talk a lot, and that was fun. I'd stay up all night and then on the weekends, and then somehow pull it together to go to class on Monday. It was fun then. It was great. It was a great time. I had so much fun in high school. After high school, it went downhill very, very fast. I went to college and I had made a promise to myself. I said, I'm just going to drink in college. I'm not going to use drugs. Well, that lasted about a semester. I had a roommate, and I had somehow for some reason, my personality attracts other people like me. So even when I'm trying not to use, I meet people who are interested in using. And because my personality has attracted people like me, I've met just randomly met drug dealers. I don't know why that is, but it ends up like after a semester of college, I'm right back into drugs. And this time experimenting with drugs I'd never tried before, opiates, oxycodone at the time. That was the beginning of my downfall, was the day I tried oxycodone.
My gosh. Wow.
Yeah. I think I was 18 years old still. I was 18 and I had done everything else except for opiates because they weren't going to be helpful in the lifestyle I was trying to live. But now I don't know what changed my mind, but now it was like, I can use these opiates. I can sit at my apartment and I'm completely, completely content. I don't need to be around people. You know, I can have just my one using buddy or whatever, and I can be at home all day, all night, and be completely content. And so I don't know, that was a game changer. That was the beginning of the end.
Right. Okay. There. Wow. So would you say that weed is like a gateway drug, or do you think it was more just the scene that you were in? Like, and it just,
I think 100% weed is a gateway drug because of who you meet buying weed. You know, if you're in California, you buy it at the store, maybe not. You buy it at the dispensary, but because in where it's illegal, you're buying weed from a drug dealer, and that drug dealer also sells cocaine. He also sells pills. So it's just, you're just exposed to it. You're exposed. Right. And then other people who use pot also use other drugs. So you're just, it's more likelihood that you're going to be exposed to it. I don't think it's a gateway drug. Like when I smoke, I want to go do crack, but I do think it leads that in that direction because of the people that you meet.
So it's not because like weed wasn't doing it for you anymore. So you like needed to like escalate the game. It was not like that. Yeah. Okay. No. Yeah. I think that's like a misconception sometimes, is like, that's kind of what happens.
I've got three dogs running around here.
That's okay.
One of them just wanted to come inside, so sorry. If I disappear, that's what I'm dealing with. I can still hear you.
Okay. So when you started to get in, into the oxycodone and stuff. That was like, you were freshman. That was freshman year of college. And then were your parents, like, did they know at the time? Were they aware of what was going on?
They knew. They had found little, I mean, I'll preface this with, my mom grew up in the 80s. My dad grew up like in the 60s and 70s. My dad was born in 1945. They did their, they had their disco days of like doing little bumps of cocaine in the discos, like fairly innocent. So when my parents found out that I had been using cocaine, like that's what they thought. I'm sure, I don't know this for sure, but I'm assuming they thought, oh, you know, he's just doing a little bump to go dance and, you know, pretty harmless. I wasn't though. When I did cocaine, I did a lot. From the moment I tried it, I was like, I want more. And then from there, it was like, let's just buy the eight ball and do it all night long. And I just have that addictive personality, and I have it today because I can't pick up just one cookie. If I open a box of cookies, I'm going to eat the whole box. And I will sit here and say, I'm not going to eat it. I'll put it back in the pantry. I'll walk away. Inevitably, I go back to the pantry and I get one and I just say, screw it, I'm going to eat these cookies, which was my whole mentality around using drugs. It's like, oh, I'm going to just get a little bit. I'm just going to use a little bit at the beginning of the night. And sure enough, that was impossible. I don't have the willpower to control it. I don't think sobriety is something that can be done with willpower alone. I know people used to ask me, why don't you just quit? Well, I would quit if I could, but I literally cannot quit. And I don't think anyone can understand that unless they've been through something like it. But from what I've heard from doctors and researchers is that it takes over the part of the brain that says, I need to eat, that I need to breathe, that I need to sleep. I also need to use these drugs, that it just, that's the part of the brain that it just, the chemicals are released. I don't actually know the science, but
yeah,
pretty powerful to me, knowing that I don't have a choice unless there's something else for me.
Right.
To take that place, which can be spirituality or in my case, running now.
Yeah. And I was going to say, like, do you feel like running has taken that place? And are you at all obsessive about it? Like, yes. And feel like you have an addiction now to running?
I do. And I don't think it's a problem until it becomes a problem. I've in these last 5 years, I've not been injured. So I don't think I'm taking it too far. But I am definitely obsessed. I'm obsessed with the miles. I'm obsessed with hitting the times on the workouts. But I think that's what makes me a good runner, is that I will dig deeper than as deep as I possibly can to finish this workout. And it doesn't matter what in the moment, what the physical consequences are going to be. I'm going to do it. So like I said, knock on wood, I've not been injured, but I have definitely had little things pop up that I've been like, well, this could become an injury, but you know what? I'm going to finish this workout because that's just who I am. And I'll deal with this injury later. Luckily, nothing's ever turned out to be anything serious. I've never been hurt so much that I've had to completely stop running. I've had to, you know, ease up a little bit, but nothing has taken me out. And I'm really grateful for that, because I think I'd find something else. But sitting here thinking about it, like, what would I do if I couldn't run? You know, I would have to find something, because that is a huge part of my life. And I'm sure I would, because I love fitness in any aspect.
Yeah. And I think it was a while ago. I think it's almost been a year since I do these episodes that are on topics like addiction or eating disorders or whatever. I do a lot of research around them, and it's been a little bit of time, but I think that some of the things around why running is so helpful in place of something like addiction is because, one, it fills that time, right? That you're, you know, that you would be spending thinking about it or doing it or whatever. It also gives you a different community, you know, I don't know if this is the case for you, but a lot of people with addiction, are missing maybe, I don't know. Maybe they don't necessarily feel good about themselves or feel like they need something that to make them feel good. And running kind of gives you this community that supports you. And so I don't know if there's like a lonely aspect to it. And then the last thing before I'll let you like chime in and say how it worked for you is like, it also is almost like redemption from, you know, a lot of people say like running is like redemption from, you know, being in that place.
It so much is, I had to, and I had no genuine friendships. I had acquaintances that I would use and they would use me to get right. what each other wants. And face to face, we were friends, but not really. We were mm-hmm. not genuine. So I had to, I have my one friend who has been my best friend through all of it. He never quit supporting me. He has been with me at my lowest lows and my highest highs. And he always is just happy for me and supportive and the best friend ever. Aside from him, I don't have any friends from back then. I had a whole new friend group, and you said redemption.
Mm-hmm.
And that is so true, because coming out of addiction, I had no sense of accomplishment. I had shame and I had yes. guilt for everything that I had done. And I had the reward, or that there was no reward. There was no payoff. So and everything was about instant gratification. So running completely, first of all, I'll start with the community. I said it earlier, my community, my friends, and is all from running. And then coming back to that redemption, I was good at something. It was nice to be not, I don't even mean good compared to other people. I just mean successful in setting a goal and then achieving the goal. And right. that's where that payoff comes, that reward of, I'm not, and what I'm doing today right now, the run I did this morning, is not going to pay off for 3 months down the road. Like, what I'm doing now is, it's a long-term goal. And to be able to work for something, work really hard for something, and then achieve it or get close, and then be okay with only getting close, has given me self-worth, and it's given me self-confidence, and it's improved my self-esteem, and just to be able to, because I never had that. I never had anything to work towards. If it was in school, I did the bare minimum. If it was at a job, I did the bare minimum just to get by. And then now I get to exceed my expectations, other people's expectations, and then see the reward. You get to see, you see where you are 6 months ago, and then you look at where you are now, and you're like, that is visible, almost tangible success, personal success, that I can now see the difference of these last 6 months. And that's a huge redemption, reward, or whatever success. And I needed that. I needed something to help me feel a part of society, you know, because yeah. I never did. I was like a burden to society.
Yes. Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah.
So that's a really good point. You have a lot of insight on this. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm gonna ask you a question, then I'm gonna look up the file from last year, because I bet I have some pretty interesting quotes that you'll be like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
While I'm looking at that file, can you talk a little bit about, like, well, first of all, did your friend never get addicted like you did? Okay.
No.
So wow, what a great yes. friend to like stick with you through all that, and like yeah. that's amazing.
Yeah. You know, he tried some of the harder drugs. I think he would use Oxycontin with me, but not like I did. When I started doing heroin and meth and crack cocaine, that's where he drew the line. And so yeah. so I had the line.
Oh wow, too. Okay, crack and meth. Wow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Did it all. And I did it all for a while. And that's what it ended up as. And I think that is the typical road of addiction, is that it starts off fun and it's a great time, and then it gets to be not as fun, and then it gets to be a chore, and then it gets to be survival. Like, I would literally right. use to not feel sick. And I was stuck in that cycle. I would use to not feel sick, and then something would happen. I would get in trouble, or I would run out of money, or I would go to my parents and say, hey guys, like, I've been using, I need to go to rehab. And they'd be like, okay. So in my head, I'm like, I'm going to go to rehab. I'm going to dry out. Like, I'm going to sober up. I'm going to make some money, and then I'm going to go right back to it. And that was,
oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So you went to rehab just totally expecting to go back to it.
Every time.
Really?
Even the most recent time. Yeah. Really? I thought I was going to use forever. I didn't want to, but I just had accepted that this is who I am, and this is who I'm going to be forever. I never wanted to quit.
So
okay, here, this is what I would say, and this stands true still. I wanted to want to quit, but I just didn't want to.
Okay, no, that's yeah. the way, yeah, exactly. That's a really clear picture. And that sounds sounds even, like it would be like, yeah.
Even most recently, I've been to rehab six times, six inpatient rehab facilities. The most recent one, 7 years ago, most recent, but it was the one where I got sober and stayed sober. I went into it with the same attitude that I always do of, I'm going to go there, I'm going to dry out, I'm going to feel better, I'm going to put some weight on, I'm going to make some money, and then I'll go back to it. My plan is to be able to control it this time, but knowing back in the back of my head, I won't control it. It will go back to where I left off very quickly, and then I will keep spiraling out of control. But I was somewhat okay with it. I had maybe not okay with it, but I had accepted it.
Yeah.
And so even this last time, my sixth time in treatment, I went into treatment. I had actually snuck drugs in with me to use for the first day or two that I was there.
Wow,
I
got okay.
That. While I was there, I had some sort of moment of clarity where I was like, you know what? I'm going to try this with everything I have, because what you do in rehab is that you get like therapy. And then, but the main thing is that you get like the prerequisites to learn about a 12-step program. And that's actually the work starts when you leave treatment. And so I said, I'm going to give it a try with everything I got so that I can say, hey, I can say it with true honesty that it doesn't work, because I tried it 100%. I tried it 100% and it worked. There's a saying that sobriety is not for people who need it. It's not for people who want it. It's for people who do it. And I have found that to be true, because I didn't want it. I definitely needed it, but I had needed it for the past 10 years before that, and I couldn't do it. It didn't matter how badly I needed it. It was just doing the work, and it worked. And the biggest thing for other people is like, I got sober and the first 2 years of sobriety were kind of miserable. I mean, not that I wanted to use, because I was, you know, working on myself and figuring out what my triggers were and what made me want to use and how low my self-esteem was. But I still inevitably would just go back to it. And yeah, anyway.
Wow. That's such a good quote though. Like what you just said about like, it's for people who do it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's no wonder that it transitions over to running, right? I mean, same thing.
Exactly. Same thing. There's a lot of similarities in the other, the running has just, it's changed my life in so many ways that it blows my mind. If I had looked back 5 years ago, still sober for 2 years, this is not what I pictured. I pictured something way more miserable and boring. And some may think that my life is pretty boring today, but I wake up at 4:30 every morning and I try and be in bed at 8 p.m. every single day.
Yeah.
Because that's, you know, I like to use the light. And as soon as it gets dark, I want to go to bed because I want to wake up early and drink coffee and then go get back to it.
It sounds great. Yeah. I mean, that sounds great to me. And I get how I have teenagers and they're like, why are you so like lame? Like we go to bed early, we wake up early. I'm like, oh my God, like there's nothing better like now. And I'm sure like if my parents were to have said this, I'd be like, whatever. But like to see like a sunrise or like appreciate those things. Like it's, and I love that I can do that now because those are the things that are always there. Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm totally with you though. And I love waking up in the morning. Like it's not always been like that. I haven't always loved to wake up in the morning and be excited about the day. But now, like for whatever reason, like I am, and that's awesome. And even if I think about what I do in a day, I'm like, that's not that exciting. I'm still some reason, like, yes. I'm trying to see if there's any notes here that like, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff on like the like scientific evidence of it. Being good for the brain chemistry and it rebalances the neurotransmitters and all that. But I think the stuff that you're saying is way more interesting than the stuff that I have on here that I wrote down. But
that is also true because like I said, 2 years in, I was a pack a day cigarette smoker. I was a very unhealthy eater. I didn't know what a calorie was. I knew what protein was, but I'd never paid attention to it. I didn't pay attention to carbohydrates and having a balanced diet, that all came with wanting to improve my performance. And so doing the research on my own to figure that stuff out, but I kind of went off on a tangent here, but you had mentioned like the rebalance of chemicals. Like, I've never felt this good. I'm tired all the time because I run a lot of miles, but I feel great. And almost that the fatigue is almost a reward in itself. It's kind of hard to understand, I guess. You probably, people who run probably understand. It's like,
oh yeah, it's like you feel, yeah, like you accomplished something. You're tired, yeah, exactly, but it's because you've worked so hard. Yeah. No, for sure. And I mean, you have to be so proud of yourself, right? Like, you have to wake up every morning, or maybe not like in the morning, but go to bed every night and be like, wow, I did it another day. Like, that's like, to feel like that. I mean, do you get that feeling?
I feel accomplished at the end of the day. And I had never had that before running. And I say running because that's where the whole trend of bettering myself in all aspects started. But at that point, like now, I mean, if I don't start my day off with a run, then I'm pretty, I'm not very productive the rest of the day. So that's where it starts off, is like, so I take a week off after I run a marathon, and that whole week, it's like my whole day is thrown off. I feel like I've wasted the whole day because I start, you know, 2 hours later, but I'm like, I'm not in it. I'm not fully awake until I've run, and then I feel awake and I shower and I get ready for work. And, it's the start of my productive day when I can start it with a run.
Yeah, you start off on the right foot.
Yeah, exactly.
We could talk forever. Like, your story is so interesting, but I definitely want to get to like how you started running after you found sobriety. Like what were you like, I think I'm going to go for a run. Like, did you remember that part of your life and were like, I'll give that a try again now that I'm like, how did you, what was your first run like?
So, like I said, I was a pack a day, a cigarette smoker. I was 2 years sober. I was walking through this park by my apartment and I saw this group, and this is where it all started. So I tell this story every time I talk to someone about it, but I saw this group doing a boot camp, like a fitness boot camp. And I was walking by smoking a cigarette with my dog. And I was like, hey man, what are y'all doing over here? And this guy's name was Jacob. He goes, this is my fitness boot camp. He's like, here's my card. You should come out. I was like, yeah, you know, I'll think about it. And I actually went out the next day, and it was like a Thursday or something. That it hurt my chest so bad because the running part hurt my chest. But
yeah.
I put down cigarettes that weekend, and I never picked them up again. So I did that for about a year, just like HIIT training, like interval training. We would do short little bits of running. And I thought during that time, I would run from my apartment. I'd run a mile. I'd run half mile down this hill to the trail, and I'd run a half mile back, and that would be my run. Thinking like, like what you asked, it was always in the back of my head that maybe one day I could be a runner, because I knew I had it in my genetics to do so. But that's where it started. I did that for about a year. I would do like a mile run. Then I had a friend that I met, and she would go to the gym and run for 30 minutes on a treadmill. And I was like, whoa, that is a long time. And one day I said, you know what? I went and got like a day pass at this gym, and I hopped on the treadmill and I ran for 30 minutes at like a 7:30 or 8 minute pace. And I was like, I impressed myself.
Yeah. Wow.
And so from there, I was like, okay, I want to join a running group. So actually, it was with my boot camp that we did like a 6 mile run. He had a Saturday where we met up and we all did a 6 mile run. And I was like, wow, I love this. And then from there, it was December of whatever 5 years ago was. And I went to this local running store. I went in there, I said, hey, I need a pair of shoes. And if you have any information on a running group, I'd love to hear about it. And she said, yeah. She introduced me to this guy named Gilbert. He was my coach for the first year of running. With him, I ran my first half marathon. I ran my first 10K in March. And then in June, I ran my first half marathon. And then in December, I ran my first marathon, and I was just hooked.
Wow.
Yeah, it was.
Okay, so I want to hear about those first races, but like the picture that I'm getting in my head, like of you, like is like, gosh, okay, so you had, you know, fifth grade, you always wanted to be a runner. Your parents were marathon runners, like you had that. And then you went through this really difficult period that you never thought you would come out of, right? You kept going into rehab and then, you know, but never with the expectation that you're ever going to be completely sober. But then you do it, right? So it's almost like you're doing the impossible, right? Like you're doing something you never thought you were going to do.
Yeah.
Which is like, that opens up the possibility for everything else. So all of this, like these running goals and all this stuff that, you know, so it's almost like, I don't know. I feel like it's almost like you beat addiction and you're like, gosh, if I can do that, I wonder if I really can, you know, do this running thing, that, you know, and it just opens up that, like the possibilities. And then obviously as you continue to have success with running, like it's the same thing, like, you know, it opens up all these other things for you, which is so cool. So as far as like the very first like races you ran with this training group, like what were your times like then that first year?
I ran like a 36 minute 10K and a 1:16 half marathon and then a 2:36 marathon.
What in the actual?
Yeah.
Dude, was your coach like, who are you?
Yeah. Yeah, he was. He was a huge supporter of me from day one. He told me one time, he goes, he's got this African, he's from Burundi. He's got this African accent. He told me one day, and this has stuck with me since forever ago. He goes, Mitch, you have no idea how good you're going to be. And I said, whatever, man. Like, and I look back and my goal when I joined the running group was like, I want to run 1 5-minute mile. And I did. I ran a 5-minute mile and it was huge because I hadn't run a 5-minute mile since high school. And I thought it was impossible. I also thought 1 5-minute mile was just incredibly fast.
It is.
It is very fast.
Yeah. Yeah.
And from there, it just kept progressing. And, as of now, as long as I keep progressing, I'll keep at it. I think that once I kind of plateau and I quit getting PRs, I have other interests that I would like to explore, such like cycling. I've gotten into cycling and I'd love to get into CrossFit. The community with that looks really fun. And I'd love to like see what I can do in those. But until I quit getting better at running, I'm going to stick with running.
What about an ultra?
I watched this. So the company that sponsors me, they made a little like an hour long documentary on Sally McCree.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no interest in doing ultras until I watched that documentary. And it's the seed has been planted. I don't know if I can anytime soon, but
yeah,
those 100 milers look kind of fun.
Yeah. I mean, talk about like, perseverance.
That's a whole nother mental toughness that I would have to really get used to. It's one thing to run for 2.5 hours, but to run for whatever
a day, 24 hours, a
whole nother story. And but that may be something that I do at some point.
I've heard it's pretty wild.
Yeah.
So for as far as like your congratulations on qualifying for the Olympic trials and CIM, was that from like 5 years ago? Were you like thinking that, or was it after that first year? And like, when did you start thinking about that?
After the second year of running.
Okay.
First year I was like, so my first marathon, I wanted to run sub-3 and people were like, oh, there's no way. Like, you know, and then I started getting my workouts started showing that I could probably break 3. And then I was like, I knew a guy and he had run 2:41. And I was like, I looked up to him. Like, I was like, wow, that is incredible. 2:41. I don't know how, that's like 6:10 pace for 26 miles. And that just blew my mind. And I was like, and so for my marathon that I ran, my first marathon, my plan was to run 2:41. But when I got on that starting line and I felt so good, I just was just like, I'm going for broke on this. I didn't know what it was going to look like, but I started off running 5:50 pace and I'm like, I'm going to do this as long as I can. And I was able to do it for the whole race. At that point I had no thought of Olympic trials. But 6 months later I trained for a half marathon with a new coach who is my coach now. I ran 107 in the half marathon, and that was when I was like, because I was looking at the rate of improvement, and I thought if I could keep this up, that was the first time when I ran 107 at in Duluth at Grandma's or Gary whatever half marathon. That was when I was like, you know what, maybe I can do this. So from then on, and I had friends at that point. I had started running with like the elite runners in Austin. Not quite to their level, but like I could, it was in sight. And I thought, you know what? And they had qualified for the trials, back in whatever, the previous year was, and, the previous Olympic cycle. And I was like, you know what? I think I can do this. I wasn't sure how long it was going to take. And, but I had set my sights on it and had set it as a goal. And honestly, I thought I was going to do it before I just did it, but it's, the marathon is hard.
It's really hard. It can be very unpredictable.
Yeah, it's unpredictable. I had a race, Chicago, 2021
was the
race.
It's hot.
And there's nothing you can do about it. So that was the race I was going to do it. I didn't do it there, but I think I probably was in shape to do it that race. But I knew after that race, I placed 24th at the Chicago Marathon. Granted, it was two hours, 23 minutes, which I had run 2 hours, 23 minutes the year before, but it faster. Actually, I ran 2:23 high most recently. But I thought with the heat that I was like, I could have done it today with a good weather day. So the next year was just sharpening up and adding, we kind of did a whole nother training block. It was completely different most recently. Okay. And I think that was the key. The little changes that we made.
What were some of the changes? Like more mileage or?
I had done the mileage before. I had averaged like 100 to 110 miles a week leading up to Chicago Marathon. What we had focused a lot more on intervals. So the most we would do at marathon pace was like 6 miles. So we would do like, or 4 miles, but like intervals of it. So we'd do like 3x4 miles or 2x6 miles or 4x2 miles, or we did a lot of track work, a lot of 1Ks and 2Ks, but nothing, no tempo runs, no like proper tempo runs. And most recently, my training block, every other week we did a tempo, whether it was an 6 or 8 mile tempo and then some intervals afterwards.
Wow.
And then our long run workouts, we did a few of like, the key workout was, it was 10 miles easy and then 11 miles at marathon pace minus 5 seconds. And when I showed up to that workout, I told my coach, I was like, there's just no way I can do this. I've never been able to run marathon pace for like more than 6 or 8 miles. And this was 10 miles or 11 miles marathon pace minus 5 seconds.
Right.
I ended up nailing that workout. When I did that, I said, I can do this. I'm going to do this at CIM. I'm going to run 2:17. And I had made up my mind. I was sure of it. My coach was sure of it. And sure enough, we did it.
That's amazing. During a marathon, do the thoughts ever come up about like addiction and like how you fought through that? And like, does that ever pull you through a race?
Yeah. You know, what pulls me through a lot of times is that nothing is ever going to hurt or be as bad, like emotionally as bad as it used to be. And that is true in pretty much everything in my life. I don't really worry about things because nothing will ever be as bad as it was when I was using, because it was horrible. I mean, it was fun for a long time, and then it was really not fun for an even longer time. It was survival and it was completely miserable. I was a prisoner of myself and my addiction, and just like the self-hate that comes out of it is just, I don't wish it on my worst enemy. So that does give me some comfort knowing that no matter how badly this hurts or how disappointed I am or how anything, it will never be that bad. And that helps me a lot.
It helps you get through. Yeah. If there is anything that you would say to like your past self or anything like that, is there any message that you would give him? Or,
you know, it's a good question, because a lot of people told me a lot of things that I wanted to believe, but I just didn't. One was like, hey, 5 years down the road, you're going to look back and your life is going to be 180 degrees different. It's going to be so much better beyond your wildest dreams. You'll never be able to dream of how good your life is going to be in 5 years. And I was like, you know, whatever, man. But that has every year, the previous year, I'm like, I don't know how it can get better. And it does. And it gets better. And I'm happier every year. I accomplish a little more because a huge one is like my personal life outside of running, which has all been inspired by running. Just starting a career. I started a career in real estate this last year, and I can't believe where it's taken me. And I never thought I would get married. I never even really liked a girlfriend all that much. It was like company. Yeah. That all changed as well. And we're getting married this summer, and I've got a career, and I've just got so many things that I never would have imagined. One, that I would enjoy, or two, that I would achieve.
Right.
So that's pretty cool.
Dude, I hope you're so proud of yourself. Like, I think it's an incredible story. And I don't know if you've seen this guy. I came across him on Instagram. I think he's got a business, and maybe it's an app where he does a times capsule. Have you seen this guy? He's like, he's a spokesperson for like addiction and recovery and stuff like that. And he helps people with addiction. His video went viral because he did this time capsule of when he was getting sober to his future self. So like, if you were to do a video right before you got sober 7 years ago or whatever, to yourself today. And the video is just like, it makes me so emotional. It's just like, hey man, like, I'm so proud of you. Like, I love the person that you've become. And this is him coming out of addiction. Like, so he's not there yet, but he's doing this video to himself. And like, he's like, I'm so proud of who you've become, and I'm really cheering for you, and like all this stuff. Like, it makes me emotional right now, but like, it's incredible. And definitely need to check him out. He now, because his video went viral, he shares all kinds of success stories, and he's always posting, people's stories. But like, I think that's such a cool thing to do. And that's why, like, I asked the question, like, what you would say to yourself. You know,
I didn't actually answer that question. I think the short answer is, I don't think there's really anything I could say that would have made a difference what is the point I was trying to get across, because it takes some courage to do what he did and say that stuff, because at the time I'm like, coming out of addiction, I'm hopeless, and to be able to even just fake it and say, hey, I'm proud of you, like all this stuff. That's huge, because there was no feeling of that emotion inside of me. But he's right, because everything changes just by stopping using. Everything changes, and it's incredible. I'm excited for what else is to come. Like, who knows?
Yeah, absolutely. So I did not follow the outline whatsoever. Yeah. I just like talking to you, but I guess if you could leave us with any kind of like advice or mantra, if you have a favorite quote, anything. I mean, there's definitely a couple really awesome things that you said during the interview.
I had something a second ago and I don't remember what it was. I remember. I look back at like what I'm doing now as far as social media and podcasts and being so open about my addiction, because I want to make sure I'm not doing it for selfish reasons. I do it because when I was not sober or newly sober, seeing people who had success stories was huge.
Right.
Just knowing that there were people as bad as I was or worse off than I was who had got sober and who are happy and who have jobs and hobbies and friends. That was so inspiring to me. I can't tell you how badly, like, that's what I would do when I would seek people out that had what I wanted, because they were inspiring to me. So back to what I was saying, I have to check myself just to make sure that what I'm doing is still for not my benefit. It's for the benefit of others. Getting my story out there, letting people know that it is possible, because I just remember how huge that was for me, to see people who had succeeded in sobriety and found happiness. I'll leave it with this. I was a bad drug addict. I was the type that ends up dead or in prison. Mm-hmm. I had no regard for my safety, and that is with the amount of drugs I would use, or even the situations that I would put myself in. I would be in a crack house in the middle of Oak Cliff, surrounded by gangsters, and I didn't care. Like, any second, anyone could have robbed me, killed me, kidnapped me. I didn't care. I was numb to it all. So if I can do it, anyone can do it. And that is where I'll leave it at that, because that seeing others say that and do that and succeed was just the most inspiring thing to me when I was getting started with this.
Yeah, I think that's a big, that's a huge message to know, like, just to have that hope. You need to give that to others. There's no part of you that feels like you're doing it for a selfish reason. It all feels like you're doing it to give hope to other people. So we appreciate that. And thank you for sharing your story.
Yeah.
And so excited to see what's coming up for you. What's next?
I don't know yet. I'm looking at options, because another thing I've noticed is that if I don't have a race on the schedule, I'm not motivated to train. It's hard to train when you don't have something in the future that you're training for. So I'm looking at that. I did that half marathon. I somehow put a little mini training block together, did the half marathon, and then I took a week off. I took 2 weeks off, 1 week because I was so beat up, and the second week because I was out of town on a ski trip. And now I'm back and I'm fresh and I'm ready to find something to train for. And I want to do, I don't know what it'll be, but I've got the Olympic trials in next a year. There'll be some things between then, but I'm not sure what yet.
Okay. And then wedding planning. There's going to be lots of wedding planning.
Oh yeah. That's a whole nother story.
Does your fiance run?
She runs. She's a runner. She's more of a cyclist. She does that a little more competitively, but she's a runner. She runs every day.
Okay. So, that's so awesome.
Yeah.
Well, definitely wish you guys the best. And we'll all be following you. Cause you are an inspiring person. And, can you tell us where we can look for you? What's the best way to get in touch if anybody has, wants to connect with you?
Instagram at Mitch Ammons. I respond to every DM especially asking about sobriety and struggles. And when I say I hope to inspire someone, it doesn't even have to be addiction. It's just, and everybody has something.
Yeah.
Whether it's more or less minor or more major, it doesn't matter. It's the struggle for that particular person.
Yeah.
It's as big as it is for that person. It doesn't matter. There's no comparison. Everybody has something that they struggle with, and there is a way out. And I'm willing to talk to anybody, especially addiction related, because I've been there and I've struggled and I made it out.
Yep. Well, thank you so much for speaking with me today and sharing your story with our
thank
listeners.
You.
I appreciate
so
it. And I hope that you have an amazing rest of the day and good luck with everything.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Mitch.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye.
That brings us to the end of this episode. Thanks to Mitch Ammons for joining us. We hope his story inspires you to keep lacing up. If you enjoy our content, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. And be sure to come back next week for my conversation with the most entertaining running coach on Instagram, my new friend from across the pond, Gary House. Until then, this is Nikki Tamburino. And don't forget to keep running, keep inspiring, and keep sharing how maybe running will help. Have a great run, everybody. I hit record a drop, you can't ignore it. I'm transforming now, these cars and planes, I'm always boarding. Just out touring down in Charlotte like I play for Hornets. When I'm performing, never boring, now you can't afford it. Champagne Perrier, finished friends on my face.
looking like I'm from the deep. These no Cartiers. Pockets deep, 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 bro. I can make it in my seat, bro. Do you, I'm doing me, bro. Making noise, use a beat, bro. Whoa. I press the button and the doors go off like, whoa. That money clip was not a noon, I looks like, whoa. Upgrade her diamonds, now her girlfriends are like, whoa, 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 whoa. Neighborhood on the scene. Neighborhood on the strip. Neighborhood be the name. Neighborhood no crib. Neighborhood that's me. Neighborhood that's Nick. Neighborhood do the dance. Neighborhood do the deal. Okay, thought I'd never make it like no way. I'm the real deal, no role play. My days off, that's no days. No, I hustle hard, young rosé. E be the shooter, that's cold case. Those on the deals, that's rosé. Got no pay, yo, no say. Okay, this the news, tell them read it. Been the one since the fetus. Don't sleep on me, Tempur-Pedic. That's a no, no, no. Spending dope for no reason. Got a ball head, Mr. Cleaner. Heard the big bags overseas, then we gon' go, go, go. Whoa, I press the button.